It's like my body is a tent or something, and the bones are the poles. Really fancy Steve-shaped tent. And it can only go up in a particular way, the way the skeleton's supposed to be stacked. But the tissues, because they don't slide right, because they're not, they're stuck together in weird ways, because I was crushed in the accident and everything, they've made them not quite be stacked the way they're supposed to be. Nothing rotates quite like it's supposed to. But because it's such a complicated structure, it can accommodate. And what I've been able to do with this, when I actually have the cannabis on board with the enzymes, then I can kind of slip the tissues around and ratchet the bones into place just a little bit closer.
Hello world, this is the Origami Vancast, coming to you from a very windy Ehrenberg, Arizona today. The Origami Vancast is an audio podcast for the chronic pain patient and for those who suffer from ill-defined, sometimes referred to as throwaway diagnoses, diagnoses like fibromyalgia, IBS, chronic pain, myofascial pain syndrome. These sorts of things. A little over 2 years ago when I went on the road, I sold my house, everything I owned, divorced my wife, moved into a van, and went off in search of the combination of cannabinoids and enzymes that were helping my body. I have used that time to focus on my physical health and my mental well-being you know, I spent a lot of time exercising and getting better. And finally, in this last year, it's become visible enough and undeniable enough in my body that other people can notice. So in today's show, I went home this fall and winter to see my mother and stepfather, among other people there in Oklahoma. And we sat down and had a discussion to, among other things, discuss their perspective, you know, how they saw it whenever I set out to do this, because I didn't exactly have the time or the inclination to explain to them exactly what I was doing, to plan everything out. It's too major of a change. So in today's show, you know, we talk about my pain a little bit. We talk about sometimes on fentanyl. We talk about a little bit about, you know, what I'm doing right now, trying to write a book and do this podcast. We talk a little bit about death, dying, and my rock climbing. This particular conversation occurred something like 96 hours with no cannabis, but I was still exercising, training, doing everything else, and still using just the CBG, but just not using any THC. And I actually got really quite into a lot of pain, and my tissues really stuck together, particularly at my sacroiliac joint. So I had just whenever I recorded this, I actually had no cannabis in my van at all, and needed to go get some the following day. But I had found a tiny little bit after hiding in a spot that I didn't predict, and it really kind of had saved me that day. I don't talk about it in the audio very much, but it was good to find that scrap of flour that I had left over in a container, just shoved in my drawer. So in today's show, it's mostly a conversation with my mom and stepfather. And, you know, I just set up the one microphone. We had a little bit of issues with it. There's some creaking and beeping, and, you know, from my mother's furniture. And, of course, she has many alarms and things going off all day long. But hope you enjoy it. Hope it provides some insight for you.
Mom, why don't you say first, what do you think about where I'm at now? Or what did you notice when I came in this time, not this specific time, but on this go round this year, 2021, fall of 2021, when I came in? How much progress could you see I'd made, or what did you notice was different?
Your body was more defined. You moved better. Your gait is a little different. You're a little straighter. And I noticed that you don't seem to be in as much pain when you were, I don't know, turning your head, moving around. seem to do it with a little more fluidity than you used to do.
Than I did even last year? Because last year I was a lot better.
You think?
Well, everyone noticed last year when I came in that I was doing better, but not like this time.
You were, but I see that, to me, it seems like you're more fluid than you had been.
That's the thing I noticed, is that your...
movements.
Yeah, it was not as restrained. I mean, I remember what it was a number of years ago, and I remember, and 2 years ago, and I remember what it was as you were getting better.
I remember what it was when it was about as bad as it got.
Well, I remember those days too. You know,
my memory of that. I remember when you sat in that recliner with your head in one position, not able to move unless you were in some pretty extreme pain just to move.
Yeah, that's the way it was, and it used to be that I would be like, all right, I'm going to have to pee in an hour. So when I get up from this couch, I need to eat too. So when I go through the kitchen on my way to the bathroom, I'll turn the oven on and let it preheat. And then when I come back out, you know, I'll throw something in there. Like, I planned out my whole days. It was so weird. And I just planned out everything I did as the most efficient thing that I could do with as minimal movements and everything, because it was so painful.
The days that... Probably ought to preface the fact that your mom and I have been together for 12 years.
Yeah.
So I know, and we've known each other for 30 plus years. So I remember when you had the accident. Mm-hmm. I knew about that too. Yeah. But the thing that strikes me the most is when you would come and visit, when you guys would come visit, and there would be days that when you used fentanyl patches. And it was like you were like a zombie for 24 plus hours.
I don't remember you being very communicative. I mean,
it was, you were pretty much silent, and you would respond to certain questions and others. It was
just right after your surgery.
And so the way I see you today, and especially like last year, the way I see you... is truly amazing. And then these last couple of visits, the way you move is, and I've watched you work out here, and
you see me
like you do when you were doing your yoga. The thing, and one of the thing that I've got to bring out is that one-legged push-up
yeah.
with being one-legged elevated push-up.
Balancing on a cork block.
Right, right. And
yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. For somebody that, when I would sit on your couch and try to talk to you, you would say a little bit, and then you would be silent for a long period. It was just, that was so painful for me to see.
I am curious how you guys perceived it. But now if we rewind a little bit and we go back to, you remember whenever I went out on the road, or whenever I originally even told you, whenever I was going into the van and everything.
Yes.
What do you think would you have imagined that it went this way?
Mm.
What did you think the probability was that it would go this way? That I would heal myself and that everything would go as I pretty much said.
My first thought was he fell down and hurt his head, but
he did.
It wasn't that long time ago.
That guy must be smoking weed?
Yeah, but
no.
But the fact that sometimes with a change in venue makes a lot of difference in how you look at yourself, how you feel about yourself, and
possibilities,
and kind of understand that, you know what, maybe I was not the ogre that some people made me out to be. Maybe I was. And maybe freeing yourself from some...
A situation.
Well, I mean...
That makes a big difference.
Yeah, well...
Psychologically.
You can't... I wouldn't have been able to do it without... I mean, it was change everything. Let's blow everything up and let's do it, because...
Well, that was my fear. Most often, whenever you change too many things at once, you end up with a meltdown, which I think you came to that point. You came to that meltdown point, but you were able
You talking about when I was selling fentanyl?
No, when you first started on the road.
Well, I got to a hard point. That was, I mean, the thing, I've kind of told this to you before, but once, like whenever I picked up the keys there that day, that Christmas back in, what was it, 2017 or whatever, and I was going to go to the store and buy the stuff, like, that was a real defining point, you know, where either you're going to do what it takes to live, or it's time to pay up. And the, I would say once I got through that point, I reprioritized myself and I made myself as a number one priority in what I'm doing.
With the with changing so many different aspects of your life at once, it's inevitable that creates enough stress to where it explodes outward somewhere.
So where did it explode out? We can cut this part out or whatever, but I'm curious what you think exploded out. Because as far as I'm concerned, it went almost to the letter to the way that I designed everything to go. And none of it was a surprise to me. None of it was more than I could take. It was all stuff that I expected. I mean, I knew how hard it was going to be. It's not that it wasn't extraordinarily difficult, but also...
Well, the expectation that you had for yourself, maybe. But you couldn't know all of the... everything around you.
Oh, I like where you're going with this. See, what you think, you still think of me as a kid. You don't think of me as the badass $80 million program manager that I am. Because my whole thing is to make something from unknown... from nothing. I do that all the time. I solve problems that we don't know if the answer is going to be yes, no, impossible, whatever.
I get it.
I do that for a living.
But you can't control the forces around
you. You can't do that in any project. And if your plan is that you're going to control that stuff, you will fail. But so you've got to be able to roll with the punches.
But what I'm saying is most of the time when somebody does all of that,
somebody changes everything at once.
They changes it's an explosion. He changes everything all at once.
Yep.
It blows up on them. Mm-hmm. But we're not used to having everything changed at once. Mm-hmm. So it kind of blew up on us. Mm-hmm. Instead of you. Because it was a surprise to me.
Well.
And that everything changed. I mean, from your job, to your marriage, to your house, on the road, buying a vehicle.
I couldn't solve the problem really any other way.
I know, and I realize that. But for the most part, people that do that don't make it through that process. I really never had a doubt that you would make it through the process. I think...
Did you think I would ever... Honestly, 2 years ago when I first went on the road, if I told you, in 2 years, I'm going to be running 11 miles every other day, how hard would you have laughed at me?
I would not have laughed. I would have given it a big hope. Because that was my hope to begin with.
Realistically speaking,
I would not have expected...
I'm going to run the crop walk every other day.
I would not have expected you to have progressed as far as you have.
The way I would have put it would be, and I hope this picks up the inflection. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
having been a runner in the past, I know what it's like.
Well, you have determination and perseverance.
Fortitude. It's probably going to be the name of my book.
And fortitude.
I think it's going to be the name of my book.
Fortitude?
The first one. Yeah. What else will you call it?
It's probably a good title.
It's a good working title anyways.
You had to have determination to begin with.
Yeah, even now.
And the fact that you didn't go to the store that day says a lot.
Didn't go to this, what do you mean?
You didn't pick up your car keys and go to the store.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what went through my mind was, I was still on fentanyl then, and I've said in one of the podcasts, you know, what went through my mind, and I was just thinking about you guys, like at my funeral or whatever, saying he didn't, you know, he did this because he was on fentanyl, and I don't want that. I didn't want that. I didn't want you to have any doubt that it was the drugs, so I was at least going to get off the drugs, and if I really couldn't take the pain, if it was really that bad, then I'd still go kill myself, but it would be a few days later, and then that got way... You know, none of us would have the question of whether or not it was that damn fentanyl. But
I'm glad you didn't take that way
but,
out.
But yeah,
you don't know.
I am glad you did not take that way out.
But suicide is not the answer.
No. Well, I'll tell you what. Whenever you know, kind of my situation was the hopelessness of the. When you're even on fentanyl, you know, and it can't take care of your pain, it's like, what the hell am I even alive for? You know, what's the... Fentanyl knocks me out so badly. And it's funny you guys say I was like a zombie, right? But I was still going to work.
Yeah.
If I wasn't, you know, I would have lost everything a long time ago. I would have been... And that's another reason how I can risk all, you know, everything of mine, basically, and do what I'm doing, because... Hell, I've already been there. You know, I got freaking laid off, addicted to fentanyl. And you try and be in that situation and feel how comfortable your Christmas is going to be. What were you going to say, Mom?
Well, I was going to say that I haven't thought of you as a kid in a long, long time.
since I got my PhD.
Well, no, probably after that.
Probably after. I still thought I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, not a kid, but an emerging adult. How about that?
Well, you know, I've maintained a lot of youthful behaviors. How about that?
Haven't we all?
Of the, well, yeah, the Camaro.
Yeah.
Which I've spent... a lot more time polishing in the last 2-3 years than I've spent driving.
Well, I am glad that you're not rock climbing, though.
Oh. Well, you shouldn't be. That's the best thing ever.
No. That's dangerous.
No, it's not. Of all the things that I've done, that's like the least dangerous thing. But you've heard my stories. That's the...
Yes, I've heard the horror stories.
You were fine with it until I told you the stories.
Well... I guess. I hadn't seen Free Solo then.
No, you haven't.
No, I
haven't. Yeah.
That's kind of put a little different then.
Well.
Point on it.
That man right there is about 10,000 times above anything I would ever get to. So that's where you gotta...
I mean, that was scary for me. I don't do a lot of heights anyway, and to be there dangling on the side of a mountain with no net below you.
That's mastery. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to for rock climbers, and I can't speak for free solo people because I only free solo when it's like to set a rope on something, or only used to, you know, set a rope when it's easy or whatever, but I think rock climbing, you know, it taps into something about you that... You're the only one that can go from here to there for you. You know, no one can really... I mean, someone can haul you up there. You top rope and get hauled up, maybe by your, you know, by the lead guy. But there's something about doing it and having the ability to do it and taking it on in the first place. That's
well, I have arthritis, certain, and I wouldn't be able to grab anything. I would certainly fall to my death.
Well, it's about what's inside you and whether or not you want to do it with the rock climbing.
Yeah, it's never been my forte.
Pure sport ever.
Well, to me, I think right now it just seems a little foolhardy. With all of your work and all of the effort that you put into getting better, it just seems a little foolhardy to risk all that to climb a mountain.
To risk it, well, if I'm climbing it free solo or with a rope?
Either way.
Either way. Yeah, either way.
With a rope, it's just like hiking. It's just got to wrap your mind around it.
Uh-huh.
You do. It's just like hiking, but the consequences are that, you know, sometimes the trail can just fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing there to catch you.
There's a rope.
Yeah, but there's that mountain there that you bang into.
Sideways.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Don't touch the ground.
The difference being is when you hike horizontally, you don't have to have a rope.
Yeah, it's hiking with a rope.
I mean, yeah, but you're hiking vertically, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't like the concept.
No. Well, at 73, no, I don't like that concept. Probably if I was probably in my 20s, I think that would be, I did some real strange things then. I think I probably could have enjoyed rock climbing. Had I.
Probably, yeah, you were a gymnast too, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know that I could get back into it, but and physically I'm in better shape now. I weigh pretty much what I did when I was rock climbing. I don't think I was ever this ripped, but I'm definitely stronger than I've ever been in my life as far as, you know, overall core strength. Mm-hmm. So I could probably climb really well, and I would really like to go up El Cap. But the thing is, you know, the thing that you have to tap into when you're climbing is control of your fear. And that's the thing, you know, that I talk about there on Physical Graffiti, that once I finally figured out a way to flip that fear switch off, that is not what I needed, you know, in my life, was an absence of fear. Or not even an absence, but a
mitigation of?
Well, just a complete disregard for it.
That's, you know, there's a reason that we have that built into us, is that,
yeah.
But for somebody to climb like El Cap, it, you know,
free solo or
free solo? No, free solo.
Well, yeah,
okay. He had to have dialed his that fear level had to been. He had to have turned it back to zero, and just okay, go for it.
It becomes like a hike. Although, I mean, like, I could speak for actually doing what he did, right? Like, you look at what he's doing at the Crux, and, you know, think of the consequences.
Yes.
Of not dancing on these little things and then falling over sideways. Completely ridiculous.
The consequences of one wrong move are devastating. And your family doesn't need to have that kind of moment.
Well, I think you have to be in that same headspace where you understand that if a person dies doing that, that they died what they love, doing mm-hmm. what they love, and that they completely understood the risks, and that was the way that they wanted.
And I can do that, but I can still blame you for doing it.
The problem that I have though is that if you do fall from those extreme heights, I mean, they pick you up in a dustbin.
Yeah, and it'll make a mess.
You know, and
I would just tell them, I would just say, wait a couple days for the coyotes to clean the bones up and then come get me.
Yeah.
No?
Wow. what?
Well, seriously, is this going to be a mess?
Yeah, it's like, well, here.
Can we talk about something?
No, here, go to the kitchen, get an egg, get out an egg and go and just drop it. And see what you have when the egg hits the floor.
You know that 12 years you were talking about? I can come to an end.
Well, I'm just using that as an analogy to what the human body would be falling that at that distance.
The callousness of leaving you there for the coyotes. No.
Well, it would save a lot.
Oh,
think of how happy the coyotes would be, like hauling my leg bone down.
Yeah.
I mean,
what if you couldn't find all the bones?
The coyotes can. That's the whole thing.
Oh my god.
What?
I can just, you know, I can just hear somebody saying, oh, he fell yesterday. Let's wait until about Sunday. We'll go pick him up then. Whatever we can find. That's... Oh.
It's grim. It's grim.
It is very grim.
But that's also, these are the kinds of things that rock climbers talk about, right? Because these are the consequences of their actions. If you screw up, everybody knows this is a game, you know? It's you're not playing. But why you protect yourself. That's why, I mean, it's not what you think it is. It's like hiking, but you're just going up. It really is.
But the thing, he went up, you know, I've seen...
Well, I'm not talking about Free Solo. That's a whole different... He's in a different league. That man is an alien. Alex Honnold is the baddest man that ever lives. He's the first monkey to the top of the pile. He wins. You got to find another planet. You want to be a badder man than him. Find another planet. Go climb something else. Be the first one to climb Mars, but...
Yeah, well...
Earth is taking...
You know, you don't... The thing is, you don't get a do-over if you make a mistake.
This is the game. This is the game.
That is not a game. You are playing with your life.
Well...
Is your life worth so little that you can risk it?
It's a different way of looking at it. Well, hold on. What do you do for recreation?
Read.
No, I mean, you know, whatever. We're getting way off topic here, but everything you do, when you drive to the store, you're taking a risk of getting T-boned and all kinds of stuff.
I know.
It's all about risk.
And that has happened, but I didn't die from it.
Listen, if you are King Monkey and you can lick two hands and stick them to the side of a plate glass window and climb up it like a freaking gecko, it ain't a risk. I mean, it's just like going for a hike.
Okay, well, for him, it may not be a risk.
Yeah.
Or as much of a risk.
Yeah, I mean...
But for other people...
They're called mere mortals. Mere mortals.
Oh. Well, that is so true. I would take one foot off the ground, fall, and break a hip. I know. I just know it.
Right. So did getting back on topic, throw away my career or PhD or any of that stuff, did that come across your mind? Did you think that's what I'm doing?
No, that didn't. No. Because really? You've already had some accomplishments there.
Yeah, it's not
And
like
you worked in the field. And I knew that you were getting disenchanted, shall we say, with the whole process. So, no, I didn't feel like you had thrown away your career or thrown away your doctorate.
I've been wanting to ask you that for a while.
No. I didn't think that at all. In fact, now that you say that, I never even thought about that.
Good.
No, when you told us that that's what your plan, my thought was that given the fact that you did have a doctorate, that you had some sort of map, albeit only 2 months, 2 months down the road, but you had this map. That and I kind of looked at it the way as a career change, because there are a number of individuals who reach that point. I have worked with a number of individuals like that that reached that saturation point
and just went,
I'm done.
You do reach that point.
And walked away.
It just depends on how, one, how much you like what you're doing, two, how long you've done it, and three, how much pressure is involved. My only concern was all of the things you changed, like I said before.
Yeah. Well, so...
And given your medical status at the time...
Yeah, I could... Definitely lifting stuff and all that was not... Remember when I first left, the 6-gallon water jugs, I couldn't hardly handle them.
I know, and that was my fear. Blowing up everything at once, and then your physical status, your medical condition.
I was in tough shape there in the beginning when I was trying to work,
That was my fear. I didn't think anything about you giving up a career or giving up... or not using your PhD or anything like that.
Really? That never crossed y'all's mind, huh?
Uh-uh.
No.
That's me. I've only started using y'all since I moved up to New Hampshire. But.
No. I never even thought about that. I was more concerned about the other parts, that would you make it through here? Not just, because there's a physical toll, sure, because of the condition you were in, but there was such a mental and emotional toll at the same time, and that's a big burden on a single organism.
I think that's the way we both felt, was that not that it had that you were throwing anything away, but that could you physically and mentally
and emotionally
handle
come back from
that.
And did you
that
even
change
in that consideration? Did you even put in all of the pain and everything that I had to deal with on top of making all those changes?
Well, that was the that yes. was that right. yeah,
it was
that
a was, lot, and that was part of it.
That was for I think for me that was the driving factor. My thought was the knowing the kind of pain you were in.
Well, yeah.
I'm glad you guys did.
You had to find some way out of it, and I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no alternative to that. That had to. Their life was no longer worth living under
anything. I prayed for that for so long, and I just.
That's why when you get to that point, when you get to the point where life is just plain, literally not worth living under any circumstance, and you look at it, you're like, man, I make $165,000 a year. I can pretty much do anything that I want. No one really tells me what to do, and I'm miserable. You know,
yeah.
So I look at it and like, well, how can I solve this problem? You know, I spend all my time solving other people's problems. And I guess that's kind of what you mean by career change, right? Like it's time to start taking care of myself and mm-hmm. start taking care of
yeah.
other people.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's where, kind of what life is.
The point that you had to deal with, not only the stress and demands of your job, but the stress, demands, and pain of your body, too, along with the normal things we all deal with, you know, normal problems, house, transportation, bills, and the whole thing. It's a lot. It's an awful lot. And some people, I mean, after you had been in pain for that long, I was really afraid there for a while. I was really afraid for you.
Apparently you and a lot of people were.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not saying it quite as much as what, you know, Matthias and some other people have said, you know, that they thought the next time that they heard about me, it would be about me killing myself.
Well, I think probably in that respect is the fact that they were probably a lot closer to you than what we have been, because being separated,
yeah, maybe
you know, the physical separation, so that makes a big difference too.
As far away, but I hear you saying that you would have done that.
Well, no, I got to the point of.
But in my heart, I didn't ever think it would. I mean, I knew you had to, I knew you had the capability to find some other solution. I just didn't know what it was. But not that.
Boy.
I couldn't think about that.
I remember having a conversation with, I think it was Nathan, an old friend Nathan, former friend Nathan. Something like that about when they when the CBD heavy Charlotte's Web strain CBD first came out, and the girl, I forget where she's originally from, Michigan or something maybe, and then they moved out to Colorado eventually so that she could have access to it. And I remember thinking, man, if there was any way that cannabis could do that, and not thinking, I was having this discussion, I was like, if cannabis could do that for me, if there was anything I could put in my head where, you know, smoking weed would fix that, like, I don't care what it would take. How are you going to stop somebody that's sick from curing themselves?
Yeah.
You know? And then here I get actually put in the situation like, all right, let's see you what you're made of then. Are you going to go do it?
So, well, yeah. But well, I always thought that you would find some kind of solution, at least.
Well, the fact that you found that solution, and it is through the use of cannabis, which... They've been talking about that's been discussed for a number of years. I say a number of years,
but
more. Yeah. There's been more and more research done now, and there's more and more proof that it's more that it can be beneficial.
Remember, you know, the perspective back then, all those years, was that, you know, my pain was probably from the spinal cord injuries. And, you know, so that's the way everyone looked at me. And that's why, you know, when I think...
As a spinal cord
patient? I think so. I think once you've been in pain management for longer than a few years, they just look at you as a lost cause that they're going to throw pills out until you either die or, you know, die. You know, they don't look at you as something that can be cured. They look at you as a chronic pain. In fact, when you go into chronic pain, you know, into pain management, they've got no interest in curing you. That's not what you're there for. You're there to have your pain managed. Mm-hmm. And there to get billed, you know, three or four different times, and get billed like $375 an hour for an office visit kind of thing, you know. Which that's one of the reasons why I started.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that was a good alternative for people.
Well, I mean...
But I don't think they know how to cure it.
They shouldn't have people that specialize in pain management. I mean, as much as I love my pain management team and appreciate what they did and everything, but that's just the wrong... I talked about this in one of the podcast episodes, but pain isn't there to be managed. Pain is there to be dealt with. The reason why you feel pain is that's your body telling you that you need to deal with this. This is something I need you to be aware of so that you can take care of it, and it's not going away until you do.
It's really... It's difficult. It was difficult for me to see that way. To know that was, there was so
try
much
having pain. Try having your mom and everybody else looking at you that way.
Well, yeah.
Try being over at your friend's for Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, and then having a second glass of wine or whatever, and then puking in your plate because you're on opiates or whatever. I don't know. There's just so many embarrassing moments over the last, you know, 17 years before I got into, it's hard to believe that it's been 4 years that I've been working on this. 4 years of getting better.
Well, it didn't, it took you a lot longer to get in, to get to that spot.
Well, in one way, I guess, but in other ways it just took a split second, didn't it?
So.
Well, several split seconds.
With your, what you've been doing using cannabis and
Neprenol.
And the Neprenol and
proteolytic enzymes.
Yeah.
Because it does work with serrapeptase.
Are you still trying to put together you keep talking about your book.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to use that as the medium to hopefully get more people to understand more, say, medicals, on the medical side?
Well,
to,
I mean...
To understand that, you know, that, hey, you know, I, this is what I've been doing, and, oh, by the way, I do have a PhD, and I'm, I know what I'm doing when I do research, and, and...
I mean, this isn't really research. I can't really put it that... If I could, if it was actual research, I would publish it, you know. I think it, I think it's worthy of being in Science or Nature if I just, if this were an actual, you know, scientific discovery that worked on more people than just me. But, I mean, to answer your question, it's what I've finally... So originally I was like, no, I'm going to get this to all my friends on LinkedIn, you know, I'm going to tell all my doctors and everything. And then, you know, for even, even the doctor that gives me my cannabis card, right? Like she's never listened to my podcast or looked at, I don't think she's read any of the papers that I've sent her or anything. I mean, people just don't have very much time. And even if they do, I think maybe the research for a lot of medical personnel right now is a little too basic, you know, that they can't really connect the dots with it. I mean, I hope, I want to reach out, you know, to the various groups that are working out there in fascia, particularly, you know, Carlos Stecco's group and Katerina Fady. I don't know exactly what's going to break through, but the book, you know, will just kind of be a more detailed version of what I've done. And it really, I think I want to focus on, I'll take your input on this, but as far as the topic of the book and really the thrust of it is, I want to focus on it for the chronic pain patients and, you know, at least kind of give them a roadmap for how I got through and what I feel is important and what, you know, like this whole thing about the purpose of pain. And I was thinking today with, after sleeping in that chair and getting the sacroiliac joints, that's what froze up on me today. I got a friend, Jen, that she had hers fused. And so I can't imagine what those joints not moving feels like. But, hopefully, you know, people can replicate my experience, even a thousandth of it was so much of a relief. Even just, I was so thankful for the first year, you know, for the first year, all cannabis did was, it was pain control for me. It didn't do this other stuff because I didn't have the Neprenol with it. And I was happy. I knew that I would be able to live, you know, like I was pretty sure if I could keep my pain like this, that I could keep this marijuana thing going and I could stay alive for however long, you know, till I was 50 or whatever. Because that was kind of always a plan. But then when the Neprenol added to it and all that, yeah. I don't know how to make that scientific enough to get it into a journal. But to write a book about it, share it with people, and hopefully it works
for someone. As a personal, to show as a personal roadmap that maybe would open some people, you know, people's other people, the non-medical community type individuals, their eyes would be open and say, well, you know what, why not? I mean, why not try it? What's it going to hurt?
I think you have to have a certain individual too that is aware of their body enough to feel those subtle changes that come so that you can build on that. Because you were saying that at first some of it was just a taste.
I was still getting much, much looser. I mean, it was definitely not, you know, it's taken 4 years for me to get this fluid, like, to where you guys notice and everything. But that's been 4 years of hours and hours every day. Every single day.
That's a lot of commitment for somebody. They've got to be in enough, have enough impetus to make those changes and to put that time in.
It's that or die. Well, that was the situation that I found myself in, and it's a pretty damn good motivator.
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm wondering about other people.
That's the thing. Other people probably... I'm sure there are people out there that would have the same drive, but there again, there are other people out there that may not have that same. I want to get out of pain, drive that at all costs, and if this might work, I'll give it a shot. I mean,
Yeah, I wonder how many people will accept that. Okay, like even if this was a cure for him, it is a lot of effort. It's a lot.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a lot of effort to make it happen. And the other thing too is something we may not have even thought about is that there may be something else that will help along with that, that will unlock the secret to making it a viable treatment protocol for everyone that's in pain. That you could build on to have a well-rounded therapy that works for people in all sorts of pain, all different kinds.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. Deb said to me originally when I left that she didn't think that other people would be able to take the kind of pain, you know, that it's taken me to be able to get through that barrier. But hopefully, yeah, the actual, like, scientists and medical personnel and stuff, that I can help them to understand this, and we can all, you know, it can be a data point for them to move forward and come up with something more effective.
Because it has to encompass more than just one type. You have to be able to treat a lot of different kinds. But you have to start somewhere.
But also, so, all right, so I agree with you there, but I also think that we all need to probably recalibrate ourselves and come to realistic expectations on what can happen whenever you take a pill or something like that. You know, it's just a medicine. The way to fix your body is to let it fix itself, because it's designed to do just that.
And well, we're all conditioned to take a pill and make it better.
We're all conditioned to take a pill and make a profit for the company that makes
the
pill.
True. But we all have the expectation that we're going to feel better if we take this or that medication. But if you look at any medication on the market, it comes with a plethora of side effects, consequences, possibilities. I mean, there's not anything you take out there that doesn't have warning labels.
Like gabapentin, right? I didn't know this. So gabapentin was a miracle drug for me for a long time, right? It was the only thing that ever did anything at all against my pain. But so, you know, I was on 2,400 milligrams every day, which is massive, you know, three of the big 800 milligram horse pills. And you go in and you look at the mechanism of action, and they don't really understand it. And they don't really, I think what they in particular don't understand is how it leaves your body. Like, that's a pretty important thing if you're putting in 2.4 grams of that stuff into your body every single day.
How do you get rid of it?
Where does it go? Yeah, what does it do? How does it break down? Well, we don't really know, but it kind of screws up the system right here. So that's why we sell it for that. And I do think it's, I think it's weird and probably not a coincidence that gabapentin also makes cannabis much stronger. Do you remember me telling you guys that? Makes it like three. It seemed to make it like three times stronger. Which is not. I'm not saying take gabapentin and then smoke weed. That's stupid if that's what you're doing. Stupid people. Well, it is. It's a drug of abuse now. But I think there's something there. You know that these are related. And I think if you were a medical doctor and not a laser proctologist, that maybe. You'd know what it was. So, yeah.
Well, but maybe there is a synergistic relationship there.
Well,
again, there's something. On some level that could be exploited for the beneficial treatment therapy.
The plant's here. It's been around for thousands of years. The pill's been around for, 20 years or something. And I don't want to take that stuff ever again. I'm happy. That was one of the worst drugs to break the addiction to, actually.
Gabapentin?
Mm-hmm. For me, because it was because of what it did for pain, you know.
I didn't think it was addicting.
It's supposedly not addictive, but because remember, I took it. I took Simba for a long, long time, and I was given to me for neuropathy, and I finally just told my doc that I'm going to stop taking it because it didn't seem to do anything.
It can induce seizures if you stop taking it.
And so I just stopped taking it. And
yeah, I know. You just quit.
Well, for me, so remember that it was mitigating my pain, and just in the same way. So yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about that today, that the, you know, I found some, I've been completely out of cannabis, and what I found from trying to quit in Gunnison, and I tried to quit in Leadville again too, just for a day or two to see what it is. If I have anything on hand, it's more pain than I'm willing to suffer through. It's like, I know how to fix this. I don't want my, I can feel all this stuff sticking together in my body and starting to I guess it scars together or whatever. The tissue stops sliding. And I can feel it getting worse, but I still want to know, like, okay, can't, what if I run tomorrow? I mean, I guess I kind of just answered this question, but if I run without cannabis, it feels great when I have with cannabis, my body feels so fluid and good, cannabis and Nepronil. But then without, you know, how does it feel? And I kind of haven't, I haven't done much running without it, you know, because I couldn't really force myself to not do it. So I ran all the way out this time, like all the way out. Empties have been scraped clean. No more digging around like a junkie. It's over in 96 hours, and it hurt. So I'm glad that that is, well, I found, just to finish the story, I guess, I found a little bit of extra flower, which I haven't smoked in years. It's probably several months old, kicking around in my van, just a few doses of it. And I've taken it here a few hours ago, and around 3 o'clock today. What is it? 7 or something.
7:45.
Yeah.
So did it, yeah.
4 hours ago. Oh my God. It? Yeah, I don't know if you can tell that I'm more fluid than I was, but yeah, a lot of what I've told you guys this before, but I'll say it because we're recording it. It's like my body is a tent or something, and the bones are the poles. Really fancy Steve-shaped tent, and it can only go up in a particular way, the way the skeleton's supposed to be stacked. But the tissues, because they don't slide right, because they're not, they're stuck together in weird ways, because I was crushed in the accident and everything, they've made them not quite be stacked the way they're supposed to be. Nothing rotates quite like it's supposed to. But because it's such a complicated structure, it can accommodate. And what I've been able to do with this, when I actually have the cannabis on board with the enzymes, then I can kind of slip the tissues around and ratchet the bones into place just a little bit closer. And so whenever I go for a long time, like I did these last 4 days without doing it, the adjustments can really kind of severe. My sacroiliac joints have been the main things that have been tearing loose, and my lower ankles and legs and feet.
So do you ever think that this is going to be, there's going to be an end to this process, or is this going to be an ongoing for the rest of your life?
So I think that with the paper, I think there's kind of maybe two main possibilities that can be tested right now. And that, so the Fady paper with the fasciocytes that produce the hyaluronan in the fascia. So mine, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to be making enough hyaluronan. It doesn't seem to be lubricating. It seems to be scarring and sticking together. I think that could be from all the physical trauma, you know, because I was smashed through the telephone poles. And definitely, I mean, you can tell I'm a lot better in general, but it seems like I get worse the longer that I stay off of cannabis.
But there is another factor there, that when you are tearing this loose and those things are sliding that didn't slide before, mm-hmm. and things are ratcheting into place, that is also trauma.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So you have to think that not only are you trying to combat the trauma that you had from the accident, but the trauma from trying to correct it.
Oh yeah, I'm well aware. I mean, you know, remember from the first, if you probably don't remember, but the first 9 months of this, pretty much, like all in the, even maybe the first 18 months, there were my traps and a lot of different tissues that I would tear, and they would be extremely, way more painful than this stuff now. Quite a bit more painful. Well, I don't know, the sacrum's a different kind of pain, but anyway, really painful stuff, and it would re-stick within 15 minutes, and I would have to tear it again. And then 15 minutes later, I'd have to tear it again. And when I woke up, it was every 15 minutes, and when I woke up in the morning, you know, it'd be, if I could get any cannabis on board, or the next day, I would kind of have to start over again.
And so my traps, you know, so those took many months.
But see, all in that time is the traumatization of that tissue over and over and over again in trying to break it loose. So that in itself creates the trauma that you have to continually try.
Well, it's supposed to slide together. So my thinking is that whenever it heals back, you know, it's trying to heal in that sliding way, and you kind of want to keep it moving. And I think that's why I run, or it's a big reason why I run, is because it, even if things are kind of stuck together, it keeps it moving.
Well, and I'm thinking that if it continues to move,
you don't want it to sit together.
No. If it continues to move, eventually the tissues will scar enough or will heal enough through that trauma, possibly.
They heal, so
to continue this. But when you're trying to heal through a trauma, that's exactly what the body does, is it sticks together. It sticks to whatever it is to try to make that tissue stronger.
Initially, yeah. But the overall healing has something to do with the way the lines of tension pull through everything. And if it's all knitted like that, I'm thinking it's...
You can't do it.
But at least if it's sliding back and forth, then the tension is being applied through the appropriate members, even if they're still... Steel feels raw.
I think it's going to take... I mean, just from the description that you're giving me and the way that I can envision it, I think it's going to take quite some time for that to heal from the continual trauma of trying to break it free and get it in the right place and then heal.
Well, does the body not produce any kind of lubrication?
That's exactly there, what we're talking about.
That when you start to tear these things apart, to try to keep them apart. So is that the function? That's what I was trying to understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they release. The fasciocytes release the hyaluronan into the fascia, and the hyaluronan's a lubricant.
Right. Okay, so what do you have to do to your body to increase that production?
those cells were only discovered a couple of years ago, so, and the fact that they make hyaluronan more recently than that.
I'd like to know how we could, and how you could introduce more lubricant into the system.
Well, it's so
complicated. Yeah.
Of a three-dimensional thing. And its scale is crazy, you know.
Well, there is such a thin layer.
Yeah, and in some places, you know, it's very finely, you know, intricate.
Yeah. It's
basically all of your body that isn't something else is fascia. You know, it's like everything that, you know, it's the filler material.
Uh-huh. But it's what gives your body structure. Or, that's the way I see it.
The tension-bearing members of the tensegrity, biotensegrity. I don't know, you know, what the opposite conditions are, but I will say that, we haven't gotten it on here, but I had some knots appear in my neck. I haven't had knots in my neck in over a year. And, you know, I used to have some really punishing, really, really punishing knots in my neck. For over a decade, I had one knot in my neck that was just...
Yeah, I remember.
Very bad. And so I was kind of surprised, you know, like 12 hours into no cannabis pretty much. This go round, I started getting knots at the base of my skull. I went for that first run. And then that first workout. So the next day I used that evening after the workout, the knots were getting really bad and hurting really bad. So I used a percussion massager and it probably got about half of them out, but they're still, you know, really continuing to knot up until the cannabis and the Neprenol, which I haven't even really taken the Neprenol very well today. Anyway, I think that the whole thing, this is totally a hypothesis, but I think it's some kind of, it's a desiccation. I think that the actual fascia is getting desiccated, and maybe it's supposed to be lubricated. Maybe it's supposed to be hydrated by these fasciocytes. I don't know how else fluid gets into the fascia. I don't know if that's been studied. I don't know if we know, but it seems to me, or at least the way that it seems to be behaving in my body, that unless I use the cannabis And really, there needs to be some amount of neprenol in there for some. There needs to be at least some amount of serrapeptase in there, if not these other enzymes as well. But otherwise, it will start to, you know, seems to dry out and not be able to slide, and then the knots form and then just get worse and worse and worse, and it begins to ratchet tighter and tighter and tighter to become more and more miserable.
Hmm.
And I was for certain miserable today. I don't know. I kind of snapped at you a couple times, Mom. I'm sorry.
And, no,
but that's how
okay.
I knew that I was in an unacceptable amount of pain.
I wondered about that because you had told me that you hadn't had any cannabis for 72 hours at that point, and you seemed to be wound a little bit tight.
Yeah, I don't notice it because I'm used to bearing it, you know, but I notice it when I interact with people.
It's difficult to, even when I was working in the clinic, people don't want to be nice when they're in pain. You can't.
You don't really have the bandwidth.
Yeah.
It's like being nice is extra effort, and you know how much extra effort I have to give?
Mm-hmm. None.
That much. So,
well,
not that that. I mean, I'm talking about way back when, not when I was short with you today. But,
well,
or whenever.
And that's what I always told the girls at the office. I said, just be nice, even if they're not happy and they're not nice. Just be polite and help them in any way you can. You don't feel, when you don't feel good, you don't feel like being nice. You just want somebody to help you out.
Yep.
And that's your job. That's your job. You're supposed to be helping the patient.
Well, it's nice, too, when you communicate with other people if you have some kind of empathy. It's hard, though, in the medical field because you have to be a pretty hard person. You can't be that empathetic because there's so much suffering out there.
Well, but you can have some empathy. I mean, there are people out there that just want their way, and they will say whatever to get you to do whatever they want you to do.
Yeah.
You have to be able to discern some of that anyway. And I think I was pretty good at talking people down.
Well, I appreciate you guys talking with me tonight. And I wanted to have a conversation with you a long time about it. I mean, really the one thing I wanted to ask you is if you thought I threw things away kind of thing. I'm curious how you guys saw that, so I'm glad.
I always thought you just were transitioning to something different, not that you just threw away. If you had thrown it away and given it up, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as like giving up the laser stuff, I'll still do that work. I still like it, but it's completely on my circumstances, right? It completely, because I started thinking about it, you know. How many guys can do what I do? Not that there's that big a need for it, but look at what doctors charge. I'm paying my freaking pain management doctor like $500 an hour or whatever it is. So, okay, I want that same money because there are a lot more pain management doctors than there are laser proctologists. So maybe that's supply and demand or whatever, but I'm just saying, you want me to come do that work? You know, my price is my price now. And if you can't pay that, then I'll do something else. That's what it's worth to me. So I think I've put a fair value on my time as far as what I'm willing to do, and I don't really care if somebody wants to pay for it or not. I can do any number of things. I can do pretty much anything I want to, and I know that. So
I'm really glad that you realize that.
Well, I don't think I ever finished, right? But I started thinking, you know, if I was going to solve this problem, okay, if I quit my job, who would I want to find and go tell them all this stuff, you know, tell them what I've done, and then have them suggest to me? And the more I thought about it, the more it's like, sounds like you're the guy for that job, Steve. It sounds like you just need to finish what you're already doing, you know, not go find somebody else, but just finish on this path. And it was, you know, when Amy convinced me that she was out, I was like, well, it is what it is. It's time to make a whole bunch of changes. I might as well do everything. I might as well, go big or go home, swing for the fence.
Well,
sit down and have a talk with myself and then go for it.
Your mama didn't raise any sissies.
Freaking vindicated is what I am now. Vindicated. That's the word. Maybe that's the title of the book. I don't know. But vindicated sort of implies that there was... I didn't feel a lot of negativity. You guys, I felt like you supported me really well. I appreciate it. Really. Going on the road. I know that was a hard thing to endorse. Like, where I would think it would be.
It wasn't a hard thing to endorse. It was a hard thing to watch.
Yeah.
Because I knew how much pain you were in already. And... Well, yeah. I mean, I couldn't know exactly, but...
No. I mean, yeah. I left here, like, it was scorched earth policy. I will die or make this happen, you know.
Yeah. You left in that van that had nothing in it.
I had a cot and half of... And
a cot.
And a bunch of boxes.
And some boxes and some boards.
And a toilet. Not the same toilet I have now. A much, much smaller toilet. An unacceptably small toilet.
And
the same refrigerator, though.
And nothing. I mean, nothing in it.
No electricity.
Where are you going to sleep? Mm-hmm. In this little cot. I'm going to build
what
it out.
How are you going to keep warm?
I'll figure it out. If you wait till you have all the answers, you never do anything.
Well, that's true, but being in that much pain and having to go out and do physical labor and work to try and find a place to live where you can eat, sleep, and relax and rest your neck.
It seemed ambitious, right? Like it was really hard for me to drive cross country in the first place, right?
It seemed very ambitious to me for you to keep going.
Okay, so now we're getting at it. It seemed very ambitious.
Well, okay. That was your word.
Yeah.
Ambitious. No. It was very hard for me to watch. Mm-hmm. And not try to say, well, why don't you just come here and I have a room here and you can just...
There's no plan in that, right? And that's not swinging for the fence.
But that's the mama in me.
Well, I'm telling you, I can't exactly explain how it went, but, you know, I didn't know how it was going to go when I went out there, and I showed up a day late to that van build, right? Like a whole day late in the evening. And then, you know, I meet Sue, and then she introduces me to Jamie. And then I've ran into him several times over the years, or over the, you know, these travels, and we've been friends, and he's been real instrumental. Not just helping, I mean, he didn't help personally, right? But just the van build, getting the electricity in the van. There's been several key things that have happened, you know, that were, you know, there's been the kindness of a lot of people.
Yeah.
You guys buy me the tires, which they bought me a set. Do you mind if I tell the world?
No, that's fine. Yeah.
My tires got bald enough, and rather than me buy them, they decided to take the hit and buy them for me, which is, I think it's probably the first set of tires that my parents ever bought for me, 44 years old.
Well, probably the second. I remember the first set.
Did you buy me?
I bought your tires once before. I don't even remember what
car. I don't know about that, but we'll see. I put in a pair of Michelins on my blue truck. But anyway, I was saying thank you guys for, thanks, like seriously, thank you for your support.
No problem, just...
You could,
Well, that's what parents are for.
You could choose to make it harder. You could choose to make it about other things.
Yeah, but parents are supposed to support their kids.
Yeah. Well...
Wait a minute, use that word support a little bit.
Well...
A loose term.
Yeah, and I... Yeah.
Well, it's all free dinners from here. I'm back, baby. I am parked in their driveway, just to be clear. Although I've been invited to sleep indoors, so it's totally okay. But
yeah, and use our inside toilet too.
The inside toilet
with a shower and laundry facilities.
Like everything else, the toilet in my van is fine. It's completely fine, no problems. Shower, having a shower.
That would be
better than a Planet Fitness. So no, I don't want a shower in the van. Like I got no interest. Like. It's 66 square feet. How many do you want to eat up for how long is your shower activity going to be? It doesn't make any sense. I will lick myself clean if necessary. Not really, but there are such things as sponge baths, and when you've got 15 gallons of water, you ain't taking no shower. So.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
I mean, if
in
you
a perfect world, maybe.
Yeah. I trade it for being able to go off grid for 2 weeks, and I love it, you know? It's well worth the trade to go back in the middle of freaking nowhere, not see any, like, not see another mammal for 2 weeks, you know? It's great.
That's pretty hard.
Well, it's been I haven't really talked about that, but there, whenever I put all this together, the ideas and everything, I was like, I can see myself sleeping in bed every day, not getting up, being in too much pain or whatever. But you start putting the van in these pretty remote situations, and you got to be motivated to take. Ain't nobody there to cook you dinner or whatever. So If you want to eat, get up and make breakfast. You know, be an adult basically.
And yeah.
Well, that does give me motivation.
Yeah, it's all been an intricate little designed thing to make this outcome occur, and I've brought it down to the wire where I'm now also broke, but I'm not. Don't worry, but it's time to make money. But
broke is a relative term,
right? I planned it just in my head like I was going to do any other project, like a laser build or anything, just like I would plan a project with somebody else's money. And so it's been good training and everything with what I do for a living. And to say that I'm tickled or happy or proud or whatever that I've gotten here, it's all kind of an understatement, right? Because, like, I'm just alive and I'm happy to be alive.
And I'm glad to hear you say that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a time when you weren't happy to be alive.
Hell no, I was not happy to be alive. I prayed often for this plane to crash or for that truck to take me out and this, you know, just drift over into my lane or whatever. It wasn't good.
But you didn't make it happen, so I'm proud of you for that. Not taking
that. All freaking gravy from this point. I mean, if I drop dead tomorrow, it's totally worth it. Totally, everything's happened to me, whatever, I'm fine with it.
You want me to bury you naked so they can see how ripped you were?
No, like the coyotes.
Oh, no.
Throw some gravy on me and let the coyote, you know, like gravy train. No?
That's so...
It's efficient. All right.
Well, yeah, the other thing is, you know, if you really intend on doing something like that, you know, go to Yellowstone and chase down a grizz.
No, well, I don't want to be eaten alive. I don't want to be eaten alive.
No.
No, that's a major thing. Like, you can throw me in with the piranhas, throw my body in with the piranhas, but not me
alive.
When he's alive. I don't want to be eaten. Yeah. But I could see like a coyote kind of chewing on my titanium neck bones, you know. No. All right. That's probably not the thing to discuss with your mother.
Well, no.
Yeah, probably not. That's a little morbid.
I still remember you when you were
immature.
Well, if you remember, you don't remember, but I remember when you were premature.
Immature.
And
been that way ever since.
Well, you were tiny.
For 1977, you
know,
I think now.
And the word wizened comes to mind, you know? Kind of wrinkled, red, strange-looking child that is just so tiny.
And when I think back of how far back I can go is when there was a half pipe out here in the backyard.
Oh, with the other one? Yeah, quarter pipe?
Yeah,
Yeah. That was a specific time period.
I do,
That's when I broke my sternum.
Uh-huh.
Matt Hoffman still writes.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
So that goes back quite a ways, too.
Adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, well,
I would climb before I would. I don't know. I thought about riding a half again. That would be kind of fun. But. All right. Anyways, let's stop it there. I'm going to turn this off. Thank you, guys. I love you.
I want to thank my mom and stepfather for sitting down with me and spending, you know, an hour and a half talking about these things and obviously, you know, engage some emotional topics, particularly, you know, going back to the time of the accident and everything. Hopefully this episode has provided some perspective, you know, some external perspective. I know it did for me, and I certainly appreciate their time in sitting down with me. So, and to allowing me to share that with the world. So I hope you guys enjoyed that.